Hey sluts, I am Channa.
And I'm Corey.
And we are the hosts of Anyways, How's Your Sex Life?
Join your fellow true crime buffs and horror addicts as we share weekly stories of murder,
demonic possession,
and nocturnal apparitions.
So grab your spirit boards, light some candles, and listen to our true crime and supernatural podcast with a comedic queer twist.
You can now find us on Spotify,
Podbean,
iTunes,
Stitcher,
and Google Play.
Also, you can like us on Instagram and Facebook or follow us on Twitter.
At AHYSL Podcast or Anyways, How's Your Sex Life?
Hope to flirt with you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Charlie, can we have another station?
You got it.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
It's not like I'm recording or anything. I am recording.
Oh. You fucking just gaslighting right there. I'm not doing it. I'm doing it.
I'm absolutely doing it. I am full of shit. Okay.
Oh my God. Are you ready? Should we just do it?
Yeah.
Fuck it. Fuck
okay,
it.
Let's go ahead and get started. No, I have to think of something funny to like bring in the episode.
You did gaslight me like 2 minutes ago, so you can just bring in with that one.
That's just what you think.
Yeah.
No, that's... Okay.
I didn't do that at all. I did it immediately.
I did exactly what you thought I did, except I didn't. okay. All right, everyone, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back to the Horrible Peoples Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster, and as always, I am joined by Anthony Fuentes. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm a little tired, but I'm okay. It's Halloween, so...
Yeah. Happy Halloween.
All jazzed up. Yeah. Happy Halloween.
Oh my gosh. Yay.
I mean, Halloween's technically tomorrow when this launches, but then a lot of people listen to us on Thursday, so happy Halloween.
Woo! No, fucking Halloween being on a Thursday this year breaks my heart.
This fucking sucks, man.
I know. I have to go to work.
Dude, yeah. And then there's like a whole Friday afterwards.
I know.
Ugh.
What? It's bullshit. Anyway, today, in proper Halloween tradition, we are covering, we're going back to our roots, we are talking about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch,
most
divisive of the Halloween films, in my opinion.
I think that's totally 100%. It's divisive as shit.
A lot of people, you either really enjoy it, or you hate it, or you're just like, it shouldn't be considered part of the franchise. There are a lot of opinions. People have a lot of opinions about this movie.
Yeah, nobody's just like, it was okay. It's either like, no, that was pretty good. I don't know why everybody's bitching. And then it's like, no, fuck that. That's not Halloween.
Well, the most common kind of, I guess, about it is just like that it shouldn't be part of the Halloween franchise.
Yeah, even the director said, oh, we'll get to that anyways. But like, yeah, it should just have been called The Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
Like, if the director's saying that, I mean, but then again... Well, you're going to hear about this production. There's a reason why he defaulted to that position, obviously.
Definitely. And, of course, we're looking at it from we're looking back.
Oh, yeah. Retrospective.
We're retrospectively looking at this. So,
yeah.
What year did this movie come out, Anthony Fuentes?
Came out in 1983, I believe. Oh, I forgot to write it down, didn't I?
Yeah.
No, wait. No, I didn't. It has a release date that I did not put in here. Yeah, I fucked up.
Google says 1982.
82, mother. Oh, I'm an idiot. Yes, because that's actually part of the script. So.
Motherfucker. Made me Google it. Made these nice people listen to typing sounds.
No, we can cut that typing out.
We're cutting the typing out.
It's okay.
Anthony's editing. It's fine.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
It's like it never happened. It's, gaslighting. It's the theme of the episode.
I know. God damn it.
All right, so let's go ahead and get started with this IMDb synopsis. Kids all over America want silver shamrock masks for Halloween. Dr. Daniel Chalice seeks to uncover a plot by silver shamrock owner Colonel Connell. Yes, I never. It's spelled.
It's a dumb weird. Old name
it's
that
a
people
dumb,
don't have
old
anymore.
Irish person name.
Yeah,
Cochran.
Irish slur was just waiting to come out.
You have to put a real like Cochran.
Yeah, Cochran.
It was written and directed by Tommy Lee Wallace, and it was produced by our man John Carpenter and Deborah Hill.
Oh, the last of the happy times for their time with the franchise.
Definitely. The film is starring Tom Atkins, Stacey Nelkin, and Dan O'Hurley.
Yep, and those are the only people of note.
Yeah, it's not. It isn't. There is not much going on in terms of a star-studded cast. There Mm-mm. isn't many cast members at all, really.
No, it's a pretty contained story. And I failed to put this information at the top, but it was released on October 22nd of 1982, and it didn't make a lot of money. But I'll save that actually for the end. So,
thank you. Okay.
Okay. So if you hear an abrupt cut there. It's because we were observing Alex's cats just living their lives for, like, a solid 5 minutes.
So, one of my cats, I think, is just, like, trying to adopt Anthony.
Oh, yeah.
And then my other cat is just, you know, being a princess as per usual.
Yeah, causing a slight ruckus.
Yeah, as per usual. So, let's go ahead and move on.
Obviously, this movie is distinguished by one very, very particular key fact. And what fact is that, Alex?
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, is the only Halloween film that is not focused around Michael Myers.
Yeah, or has him almost at all besides, what, that little TV clip?
Yeah, there's a little cameo, because so technically the Halloween movies take place... The Halloween movies exist in the Halloween 3 universe.
That's... I don't like that. That's so weird. Ugh. Wait till we start talking, like, our opinion, too.
but let's go ahead and dive right into it.
Let's go. Let's got this. So, when being asked to make the third Halloween film, Deborah Hill nearly fainted. She actually did. Based on the last shot of Halloween 2, a close-up that John Carpenter shot himself, Michael Myers and Dr. Sam Loomis were fucking dead. The era of Myers was over, and the writer-producer duo had no intention of bringing them back at all. Like, at all.
The finality of Halloween 2 is just, like, concrete. It's there.
It's a close-up of our fucking shape burning.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's a pretty definitive end right there. Still, the studio wanted more Halloween films. They were pretty insistent, though, on bringing the mask killer back. However, John Carpenter and Deborah Hill had very, very different ideas. So in the end, the studio gave in and let the producing duo handle it their way, which allowed the team to experiment with the franchise by briefly turning it into, and I say briefly, very, very briefly, turning it into an anthology, which I think was actually a pretty brilliant idea, if it worked.
If they had stuck with it, it would have been so fucking cool.
Yeah, but we'll get into actually our opinions on that. That's one of the big questions later on down the line. But yeah, so they turned it into an anthology. And this is an idea that longtime producer, and if you've listened to the previous two Halloween podcasts, big factor in Halloween success, Irwin Yablans would call, quote, stupid. He didn't like this at all. From the interviewer,
him and about 90% of the horror population.
Oh yeah, especially in the 80s. The prime slasher era is when this came out, and it's not a slasher at all. But again, we'll get there. But the team was much more enthusiastic this time, unlike when they were making Halloween 2. So they started off the production by searching for the right director to take on Deborah Hill's brand new idea. It's witchcraft meeting the computer age. Which I think they were a little ahead of their time on that one.
Definitely. Like, even when they tried covering something similar in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, there's a couple episodes where, like, they cover, like, tech and witchcraft and demons in the computer. And I was just like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, there's a demon on the floppy disk?
Yeah, like, the tech's just not there. The megabytes can't handle it.
I cannot wait until the day that we actually do episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because I'm going to do probably one that goes kind of hand in hand with this, where it's just like, look at this. Look at how dated it is. Look at what they were trying to do. Look at how dumb it is.
I have actually gotten requests from people, like, when are you going to do TV shows? So we'll see. We'll see.
I have, dear listeners, behind Anthony, I have all 7 seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer on DVD. So,
and a dope spray painting of 4 Pokemon.
Yes.
Which I really enjoy. Starters and Pikachu. From first generation. Again, nerding out right there because I love this thing every time I see it.
Yeah. One time I had someone over and they were just like, I don't think I could name them. And I was just like,
oh, get the fuck out. Get the fuck out. Squirtle, Bulbasaur, Charmander, and fucking Pikachu. Come on.
I know. I was just like, I mean, okay, I'll explain them to you. And I was just like, that's a first for someone in our age range who, doesn't know who they are.
That hurts my soul right there. Okay, now we got to get back to this movie so I can cleanse myself here. So they obviously need to find the right director, though, to take on this very weird concept. So their first choice was actually a future Twilight Zone movie and Gremlins director, Joe Dante.
Yeah. Wow.
I actually think he would have fucking killed it, though.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He was a good goddamn choice. So John Carpenter invited the young director to dinner at a restaurant in Universal City, where he told him all about the concepts he and Hill were working on. Dante suggested they hire renowned science fiction writer Nigel Neal, to adapt the material, and the writer was hired soon afterwards. So, yeah, he was known for a lot of, premier science fiction works around the time. So
cool.
He had a big name to himself.
I know nothing about him.
Yeah, so me neither.
I'm not big into sci-fi. Yeah. The Frida Cinema does basically the sci-fi equivalent of Camp Frida.
Mm-hmm.
They do Starship Frida. Where they do,
what?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
Okay, so they do 12 hours of sci-fi movies. And,
oh, that's fucking
cool. And Tristan was just like, oh, you have to do this with me. And I'm like, I don't know if I enjoy sci-fi enough.
You're like, are they going to play Independence Day 5 times?
Is it going to be Independence Day 6 times? Because otherwise, I don't want it.
Yeah. I want at least 2 Goldblum style movies.
Well, and then, okay, so I want The Fly and I want Independence Day.
Yeah, exactly where I was going with that. Yeah, yeah. I was going right there. Yeah,
and then maybe Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah. That's still science fiction for sure. Yeah. I mean,
technically, it's the most scientifically accurate, film ever.
Okay, see, there you go. Right? So, and we get 3 Goldblum appearances right there, if we go with that structure.
I love my early era Goldblum.
Yeah,
so.
No, same here. From Fly to, Hell to now. Yeah.
And then close it off with Thor Ragnarok.
Oh my God, that's right. More sci-fi. Just 4 Goldblum movies. Frida, what are you doing? Starship Frida needs the Goldblum Knight.
No, it's just, instead of Starship Frida, it's Starship Goldblum.
Oh, Starship Goldblum is... Oh, that's a screen name somewhere. Starship Goldblum.
Oh, man, we keep getting sidetracked.
Yeah, we are. Okay. They hired Nigel Neal, of course, to adapt the material and go off of Deborah Hill's ideas. But they didn't quite lock down Joe Dante. Dante was a hot, hot commodity at the time. And while Halloween 3 was still in the air, not sure if they're going to make it or not, he was offered the chance to direct the It's a Wonderful Life segment of Twilight Zone, the movie.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
So Steven Spielberg and John Landis were working fast on getting this picture made, and Halloween 3 was a much slower process comparatively.
Fuck you, John Landis.
Fuck John Landis. We've been saying that a lot this month. Anyways, so Joe, again, refer to our Twilight Zone episode if you want to know why he fucking sucks.
Why we are a staunchly anti-John Landis podcast.
And his fucking son, too. Anyways, so Joe Dante called Carpenter and told him he had to drop out of the picture. Not only that, but Carpenter had felt Neil's script needed some work, so he did a few touch-ups to the script. And when you have a prolific science fiction writer and you're adjusting his work, he ain't gonna like that shit. Just not gonna like it. So in order
to... Have you ever tried to correct a science nerd on anything ever?
No, I haven't, because they...
they freak the fuck out!
They're like, you're not taking into... Okay, when you fucking whatever. anyways, so in order to sort things out, the team reached out to a series veteran, Tommy Lee Wallace, who was the production designer and co-editor of the first Halloween movie and the first choice to direct Halloween 2, which we went over in our Halloween 2 episode.
Please check that out.
Definitely check that out. Actually, I like that one more than the Halloween 1 episode. So once Deborah Hill informed Wallace that Myers was not in the picture, he signed up immediately. So yeah, he was very anti-Michael Myers returning. He thought the one-off was, like, of course, to reiterate, a one-time character, so that if he got to do the anthology thing, he was about that. But not only was he allowed to do his take on what a Halloween movie would be, he was allowed to have a pass at the script as well, which actually confused John Carpenter, as he assumed Wallace would have just taken his script and let it be. But Wallace, of course, has ideas. So when Wallace and Carpenter showed Nigel Neal their updated draft, he fucking hated it.
I just don't think that you guys really embraced my ideas regarding the scripts. And I really was trying to focus on the science elements.
Not enough blood. not enough blood. They're like, they're just holding him near, they find a lock. They're like, fucking nerd. Somebody get me a locker. Ice Carpenter, don't piss him off.
I know, John Carpenter is would definitely be like, put him in the locker.
Put him in the locker. He just finds the grip. He's like, where's the nearest grip? Put him in the locker. Put him in the locker. We haven't hired a grip yet. Give me that big motherfucker over there. Neil's like, no, but it's about commercialism. Anyways. Oh, we're talking
I'm
on
sorry,
poor Neil.
Nigel Neal. Yeah. I'm sure you're a wonderful person.
We'll see. Yeah, I think maybe. He's had a weird history. So Neil lobbied, actually, to have his name removed from the project thanks to the upped violence and changes to the main character. Something pushed hard by distributor Dino De Laurentiis, which we've actually talked about also. As
yes.
Well. Yeah, pretty...
He's popped up a couple times.
Actually, Lots? I didn't put this in here, but what ended up happening was a very weird misunderstanding, which I'm surprised I didn't put it in there. Do you know De Laurentiis is like Italian AF, like from Italy?
What?
Yeah, he's got
the
like
name doesn't give it away.
Yeah, Dino De La Pizzeria. Yeah. No. But the translator fucked up the script translation. And he didn't understand any of Nigel Neal's shit because it was a little more abstract.
Oh, no.
So he's like, more blood. Oh. What is this thoughtful bullshit?
What is this scientific thought?
Yeah. And then, of course, Carpenter's just like, yeah, we got to compete with the blood. Like, what? The look at these movies that are out
he
right
now. He
said
more blood. We need
yeah,
more blood.
Yeah, we got to fucking do. They're paying for this shit. So, yeah, Nigel Neal was like, yeah, just take my name off that shit. 100%. But after his name was removed, Wallace was given the sole writing credit, even though about 60% of the script was still Neil's work.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Tommy Lee Wallace hated that. He was like, he loved Nigel Neal's script. Like, he actually really loved it.
So he appreciated the most of what he did.
Yeah, no, he liked the nuanced version of it. He just felt like it needed some extra stuff to, I don't know, keep the audience's attention.
Of course,
yeah. I mean, it's typical Hollywood stuff.
I mean, most scripts tend to be like a collaborative process anyway.
They do. They definitely do. But Neil, I think, had also been screwed around by Hollywood quite a bit before this. So this was just one of those, like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I'm done with this shit kind of things. But in terms of the crew, Deborah Hill basically called everyone who had worked on Halloween 2 and told them they can do a third one. So, you know, crews love paychecks. most agreed, and the production was set to roll. And with a pretty nice $2.5 million budget compared to everything else they've shot for the Halloween franchise.
Right.
It's pretty good. Now they need to spend some of that budget on actual actors, though. So,
what?
As always, Alex, how do we get these fucking actors?
Ah, yes. So,
all right.
I forgot how to swallow for a second. Not nice. Do not isolate that.
That'll open our episode.
Do not isolate that. Straight into the
cut. Oh, it was a cat again.
So Deborah Hill had wanted Tom Atkins for the role of Dr. Dan Challis.
Stupid fucking name.
Stupid. My stepdad's name is Dan, so...
Dr. Diego Chancla. Okay, yes. Non-union Mexican equivalent.
He had appeared in previous John Carpenter films like The Fog and Escape from New York, as well as several special guest spots on TV shows.
Yeah, so he's a pretty good amount of, like, the backlog of work there. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and also he's worked, you know, he's worked with John Carpenter in the past. Yeah. So it's like kind of like the subpar Kurt Russell. Yeah. They're
like, we need to spend the budget on effects. We can't get Kurt this time.
Could you imagine if Kurt Russell?
Oh my God. He would have actually been really good.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, that would have been a so much better fucking main character.
I'm just saying.
Damn.
That would have been
Why did you bring that in my fucking head? I'm sorry. Now Tom Atkin fucking... Like, just call him Dr. Chow. That's still not that good, though.
I know. And also, just his character was just shitty. Anyway, yeah. The filmmakers hired Stacey Nelkin on the spot, who would play the doctor's far younger love interest, which there's a line in the movie where, like, imply this, where he's just like, wait, how old are you? And I'm like, ugh!
And she's just like, don't ask any more questions.
And she's just like, old enough. And I'm like, what does that mean? Ugh.
Oh, anyway. That's a Wallace line right there.
I don't like it. So she was given a heads up from a makeup artist working on the film that auditions were taking place, and she got the part despite not seeing Halloween 1 or 2, something she changed after being hired. Good move on her part.
Yeah, she got the part like within like an hour of doing her audition.
That's good. I mean, can you imagine like get a job interview going that well?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing that I saw a documentary on this, and like when she was talking, I was like, oh, okay, actors like to fluff their stories, and it was like, oh, it was this and this, but then they cut to the producer and they're like, oh yeah, once we saw her, that was it. Like, wow. That was it. She was the one.
She did great. Like, I thought, you know.
She was the best part of the film.
Yeah, she was great. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she had actually stayed away from horror films for years after being very traumatized from watching The Exorcist as a child. Check out our Exorcist episode to find out why it traumatized her.
Yes, that is a very common story with children in the 70s.
Yeah, definitely. It's a common theme. The character of Connell Cochran was originally a 3,000-year-old demon, but the team felt a CEO would be just as menacing, and they needed a veteran actor to play such a hellish being. Yeah. Fucking A.
Yeah. I think some of our Goldman Sachs people are probably 3,000-year-old demons.
I definitely agree.
Yeah.
They eventually managed to get the attention of a veteran Irish actor and Academy Award nominee, Dan O'Hurley, who had experience with prestige films and total schlock, and would eventually consider this one of the latter.
Yeah, he would totally, I think the exact sentence is like, whenever I use a very specific accent, it's a fun accent, I know it's going to be a shit movie.
The team even managed to get one of the actors who played Michael Myers to cameo in the film. Halloween 2's Dick Warlock had a brief role as one of the film's assassins.
Good old Dickie
Dick
Warlock.
I think a couple, like maybe a month ago, like there was a screenshot of Dick Warlock doing work on...
Oh, The Thing.
No, it wasn't The Thing.
Oh, shit. What was
it? It was another one with Kurt Russell. I think it was...
Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. And and Dick Warlock was Kurt Russell's stunt double, and I was just like, look, it's Dick Warlock! It just felt like seeing an old friend.
Yeah, I know, right?
It did.
It's just like, man, they really did go with their, like, Russell substitutes on this one, though, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, they got Dick Warlock, who does look kind of like Kurt Russell, if you squint. Yeah. And they got Tom Atkins.
If you put Vaseline on the lens, and he's very much a Kurt Russell analog.
I mean, he was the stunt double, so, yeah. I mean, to a degree, he had to.
Yeah, that's true.
Even though he's, like, a good 3 inches shorter than Kurt Russell, but that's fine.
Just place the camera far back, you're fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Forced perspective.
Well, there you go. Filmmaking.
So with a budget and a cast, the crew was on the lookout for a new location and settled upon the small coastal town of Loleda, California, which as one of the... Motherfucker.
Oh, this cat loves me.
whatever. which as of the last census has just over 700 people living in it.
And probably less in 1982.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So their aim was to give the film a more Invasion of the Body Snatchers type of vibe. And they even named it Santa Mira in the film, which is the same setting as the 1959 classic.
That's right.
So I didn't know this because I've never seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but I think that's a really cool
little
thing. That
is very cool, right? Maybe we'll cover it one day. That would be a long-ass episode.
That would be a very long episode because then we would have to go way into alien invasion films. And then it would be way lengthy and way political.
Oh my god.
So Don Post Studios, who were originally offered the chance to make Michael Myers' Mask before they turned the opportunity down, were given the job of creating three new ones for the third film of the series. The skull and witch masks were actually variations on masks they already had in circulation in stores, but the pumpkin mask would be created specifically for the film and become the most iconic of the three.
It's true. It's the one that stands out the most.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, they're all great, but yeah, definitely.
True. I mean, it's the one that killed the child, so.
That's true.
Yeah.
Ugh, that scene. Fucking gruesome.
We'll talk about that one.
So with new masks, a new setting, and new actors finally ready, first-time director Tommy Lee Wallace was given the keys to the franchise and got to work on shooting the film with another veteran, cinematographer Dean Cundey. Let's see how that went.
Dude, we have had some good Cundey representation on this podcast so much. So far. I mean, he really did define the horror look of the 80s and late 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because Lolita, California... that's definitely not Lolita, California. Lolita, California was so small. There were a few restrictions for shooting there, actually. So, smoke and explosions were out of the question, at least for the interiors of the buildings they were filming, such as the milk factory that doubled as the Silver Shamrock headquarters. It was a milk factory. Yeah, a milk factory.
Can you imagine how nasty that shit smelled?
Oh, did I put that in here? Because if it is, I'm skipping it because, like, that's one of the things in the documentary that everyone bitched about. They're like,
oh, yeah, it smelled disgusting.
Yeah,
I'm
when
sure.
you get close to that factory, people were like, it was the most putrid, nasty fucking smell. And so they had to, they got used to it.
Yeah, Loletta sounds like a coastal central California town.
Yeah, I think
and
that's.
And I think. Probably because it has a milk factory, because it's close to where all the fucking dairy farms are. That's probably where it is. I would bet $1 million. Not that I have $1 million.
Yeah.
But
if you had access to $1 million that somebody had, you're like, hey, buddy, can you?
If I had access to a small loan of $1 million.
Well, let's wiki and then find out towards the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm down with that. All right. So to get around this, though, the crew was actually allowed to use the Don Post studio where the actual masks were being manufactured. So, you know, they fucked up on the first Halloween. They not only were allowed to do the next set of masks, but they even let them use the studio. So this gave the finale a more industrial feel, which is in stark contrast to the small town, which some of the cast and crew found extremely creepy. Like, they actually thought, like, because it was so small, they're like, people are basically looking at them through the windows. And like, you can't do shit about that.
Like, oh, yeah. Can you imagine just, like, the random walk, like, passerbys just being like, what you up to?
Yeah.
Like, fuck that.
Because, like, when they go there, there's no people outside.
Yeah.
And they're shooting at, like, 3 a.m. So, you know, it's just one of those things. But as far as the directorial prowess of first-timer Tommy Wallace was concerned, the cast and crew loved him. Like, they super loved this guy. He was easygoing and willing to talk about character and open to changes and generally had a very little in the way of ego. And stunt coordinator Dick Warlock says he was just like John Carpenter and Rick Rosenthal, an easygoing workman director that got the job done.
Fuck yeah!
I know, that's high praise. Right? Really, though, again, from the interviews, like, the cast fucking loved Tommy Lee Wallace. They just did.
Yeah. Brief interjection. I was wrong.
Oh, no.
I lost my million.
You're out a million. Where is it?
It is in, like, Humboldt County. It is in
north.
Oh, that's north. It is way north.
Okay, that's, like, border
Oregon. It's by, like,
Oregon.
Eureka.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
I know.
Okay.
I was way wrong.
Oh, no. All right. Well, I mean, you don't have $1 million.
It's
totally
fine.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of dairy farms up there, too, but I was just like, I bet you it's central, but I was wrong.
It has all the criteria for a central town. Probably a little more people than the Central Town, even with the 700.
Yeah, it has 700. By the 2010 census, it had 783 people.
Fucking A. That's so tiny. I think I had more in my fucking graduating class in high school. Oh, my God. Okay, but the first scene that leads Tom Atkins and Stacey Nelkin shot together was their much maligned sex scene. They did not have a lot of prep work and were kind of thrown into it, but they got the job done, an experience that Nelkin described as, quote, very technical.
Oh, my God.
yeah, she said, like, it was, they had to stop and, like, okay, we're going to move the camera here. And she was just like, oh, okay. It was a little weird.
Well, of course. Okay, so, like, even just, like, she is obviously a lot younger than him.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so she was 23 when she was in this movie, and he was, like, closer to 50. Yeah, so she's like double. Oh, yeah, he was like double her age.
As someone who just exited 23, yikes.
I know. Oof. Late 40s. Anyways, so Nelkin had actually also a no nipple clause in her contract. Yeah, so they had to shoot around that in the infamous scene also.
As much titty as you want, no nipple.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, just put a slight thing over the... put a quarter there. No, quarter shiny.
A weird blanket angle.
Yeah. Oh my God, that... Oh, that
it
scene.
Was a very weird sex scene.
It was a very weird, like, softcore porno sex scene right there. Anyways.
Yeah, this is definitely, like, could have been shown on, like, HBO After Dark or something. Yeah, where, like, they just isolate it. Yeah, they can't show nipples.
Just cut out all the stuff with the masks. Just have two people walk, just roll into a town or a hotel room. That's it.
Yeah,
and just have this scene.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fucking horrible.
Awful. I hate this. I'm uncomfortable.
Erotic Loleta, California.
Eroticism in Loleta, California. I hate this.
Oh my God, that's fucking horrible. Okay. But Nelson and Atkins actually got along very well on set, both being more down to earth than other actors they had worked with in the past.
I mean, that's good.
Yeah.
You want to get along with the person who you're definitely naked with.
Yeah, or, you know, sans nipples.
Yeah.
But when it came to the effects team went for a more, quote, bizarre feel as opposed to bloody. This was in stark contrast to Halloween 2, which required more gore to stay competitive with other slashers.
Oh my fucking God. Can we talk about this for a second?
Absolutely.
The scene where the hotel neighbor, like, accidentally blasts half of her face
off.
Scared the ever-living shit out of me the first time I watched it. Like, my jaw dropped, and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, I was so uncomfortable.
Her face was, like, split open. Like, it was
body horror. Like,
yeah,
to me, anyway.
It was
grotesque in the way that, like, I was physically uncomfortable. Like,
yeah.
I did not. I was just like, ooh, I don't like this shit at all.
It's because it's like her lips and nose are all, like, just
blasted.
Blasted out.
It was
out.
Just, like, blasted towards the back of her fucking head. And
oh
I was just
God.
Like, that was a person, like, 2 seconds ago. I was like, not good.
I mean, a lot of the kills in this film are really, like, gruesome.
Right. The bugs and, like, the masks and stuff, like, that didn't bug me. Pause for pun. That didn't bother me as much because, like, the mask was on. Like,
mm-hmm.
You were just more, like, you saw, like, bodies twitching and, like, bugs coming out to the point where you're just like, ugh, that's gross. But it wasn't, like, disgusting in the way that, like, that was. That was fucking gross.
Oh, I get the heebie-jeebies every time I see the critters come out, because I fucking hate... I hate crickets. I oddly hate crickets, but...
Out of all of those creatures, crickets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just seeing a mass of crickets. I don't know why. That kind of fucked me up a little bit.
Curious.
Yeah, we'll get... There's more about that scene, actually, with the shooting of it, right? Coming up in a little bit. And the roaches. Roaches also, ugh.
Roaches, yeah, all of it was fun, because, like, I like spiders, I like snakes.
No.
I had an arm, like, my arm was, like, covered in, like, Madagascar hissing cockroaches once, like, that doesn't bother me.
Man, I've held a tarantula.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have not held a tarantula.
No, it was a docile tarantula, but they're like, don't worry, it's poisonous, I'm like, oh, don't worry. Okay.
Well, I mean, they're docile, so they're not gonna bite
you.
Yeah,
they're not gonna do anything.
As long as you're not just, like, poking at it with a fucking stick.
It's like, come on, your defense mechanisms, come on. Oh, man. Okay. So, due to the amount of night shoots and a heavily physical role, Tom Atkins got pneumonia while filming Season of the Witch. Yeah.
That's what happens when you're in your late fucking 40s, Tom Atkins. Right?
Meanwhile, fucking Nelkin was just sprinting out there.
Yeah, she was just like, I'm fine.
My immunities are awesome. Hilariously, most of the outdoor shots that resulted in that pneumonia were cut from the film. He did that shit for nothing.
I mean,
yeah,
sucks to suck.
Yeah. Sorry, Atkins. He was a nice guy.
I know, I'm being an asshole, I'm sorry. And really, it's not his fault that he had to, you know, have a sex scene with a 23-year-old.
Nigel Neal's just like, you know, in my script, that wouldn't have happened because I didn't shoot. You're like, shut the fuck up!
Get back in that locker!
Get back in the locker, your script. Your script had no titties in there.
No titties!
There's no titties in this film because of nipple claws. Fuck!
Put his head in the toilet.
Oh, shut him up. we now
do sound effects on this podcast.
Yeah, we're gonna have to keep dogging on Nigel Neal. That's awesome. Anyways, where the hell was I? Okay, when it came to the infamous shot where Tom Atkins throws a jack-o'-lantern mask over the security camera, which looked fucking weird to me. That was weird.
It was so improbable. It was unlikely. It was just bad.
Okay, so here's the story behind that. It took over 40 takes to get it right.
Of course it did!
Yeah. However, Wallace thought it would be a far quicker process because he managed to do it himself just joking around sitting in the chair. So he was like, oh shit, we should... You know, I did the flinging motion right now, but it's like, oh shit, we should totally do that. And then Atkins, just his 40-year-old arthritic hands were just... couldn't handle
it. He's in his late 40s. He's not 87.
That's funny. That's true. I don't. Now that I think about that, it's a little too young for that.
I'm like, my mom is in her late 40s.
My
fuck
mom's
you.
In her 50s. So yeah. Oh my gosh. So as far as the doomed family that is present in the latter half of the film, they made a point to dress them up as tacky and ugly as possible because they wanted them to have a little bit of an obnoxious vibe to them, which I think
it was so successful. I think so too. Second they entered the fucking movie, I was just like, oh my god, you're
kill
annoying.
Them, kill them, kill them.
Please, like just turn them into cannon fodder. You're annoying as shit.
My family was just a regular family that happened to... God damn it! I'm the costume designer! Oh my god. So 12-year-old Brad Schatcher? That's a fucking weird name. I don't think he was in anything else. No. Whose character is called...
Schatcher is not a celebrity last name.
No, it's not. Brad Schatcher is a fucking predator.
He's on to catch a predator. That's his next big feature.
So what do you do with those condoms, Schatcher? I was just gonna, make some balloons. You know what I'm doing here, right?
That was about to be a really fucked up joke, and I'm too glad I didn't. Yeah.
Okay, we'll off camera. We'll bike. So his character is called Little Bud in the film, Little Buddy, and they had a mold made up of his head for the horrifying death mask scene. So they reversed the mold and melted it when it came time to portray the child's death. And they only had one Halloween mask, so they made sure that Schatcher nailed his movements as he struggled to rip the mask from his face. So I don't know why they only had one stunt mask to get it done.
They're on a budget. They had the smallest budget ever of $2.5 million
of the whole franchise. They're like, we blew it on the girl shooting her face.
So we have to make it work where we can. Also, if you saw the special effects by the end of the movie, you could tell they were running out of money.
They were
done.
Oh, they
were just like neon blue lasers.
Yeah. Who's our graphic guy? What, Perry's cousin? Shit. Anyways, a stunt double was used for when the character was on the floor being surrounded by bugs and snakes. So the bugs and snakes obviously were real. If you can tell in the film. But yeah, to move and twitch, they just had a regular old adult that was very tiny.
Good.
Yeah. When they finally finished filming the scene, they realized they were unable to contain all the crickets, and the loud chirps of those bugs annoyed the hell out of everyone as they were wrapping up. So all they could hear at night was just like chirps, just droves of fucking chirps as they were trying to wrap in on this. Get the fuck out of here. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
They're crickets. They're they have one job, and yeah. it's to be loud.
And gross.
Why do they gross you out?
I don't know why. I hate crickets. I just do.
It's literally just them rubbing their legs together.
They just look... I don't know. Maybe fucking...
Bug-like?
Hopper from Bug's Life just fucked me up. Good old Kevin Spacey. Wait, was that Kevin Spacey?
I think so.
Oh, fuck. That'll Bug's Life, too. Didn't we just go through another Spacey one?
We did. We talked about American Beauty.
Oh. Wow. Fuck. You're ruining everything.
I didn't even know it was Kevin Spacey.
I think it... Yeah, it was. Hold on. Hold on. Let's go back. We got to... We're going to cut in when we know what the answer is here.
Yep.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah. It is definitely Kevin Spacey.
He would be fucking Hopper. God damn.
Although... It does have a great rest of the cast.
Yeah, but then again, John Lasseter got ousted from Pixar, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And he also had the whole back
but
rubs
Julia
thing.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in it.
Oh, Julia Louis-Dreyfus? Which one was she?
She
main
was...
Main character? Bug yeah, girl?
She was Ada.
Huh.
And then Hayden Panettiere is Dot.
Oh, Hayden Panettiere was Dot. Okay, I'm a, you know what? That's a good...
I told you, it balances yeah, out.
Yeah, the ratio from quality people to Kevin Spacey is good.
But no, Hopper scared the ever-living fuck out of me as a child.
Dude, he was menacing.
Yeah.
He was a fucking menacing, like... Oh
great
my God.
Villain.
And now that I know he's a rapist, it just...
I know. Really just made it so much
even
worse.
Even scarier.
I had no idea it was Kevin Spacey. Oh
yeah.
My gosh. I haven't watched A Bug's Life in forever. And
me neither.
I love that movie, too.
Oh my God. Can we just, like, dub over Kevin Spacey's voice?
No, because his voice is really...
It's really good from that fucking
he
thing.
He does really good voice acting in the movie, which sucks.
Fucking A. Yeah.
God damn it. Yeah. Fuck you, Kevin Spacey.
Seriously. You and John fucking Landis. God damn it.
God damn it.
The worst people. Anyways... Back to Halloween 3. Universal fucking hated the ending of the film. They just fucking hated it.
Great.
That's I'm it. Gonna keep that pause.
Yeah. That's it. Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.
Yeah, okay, we're done. Movie over. No. The actual ending was supposed to be have screams of children played over the credits as the film cut to black, which I think would have been fucking awesome.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I would have loved that.
I would have loved that shit.
A decision by the creative team that they ultimately backed out on for the sake of creating ambiguity, which I think in this scenario, don't give me ambiguity. Let those little fuckers die. You killed one child already.
Just let it happen.
Have their screams. Just be bold.
Okay, you fucking creep. I want to hear their screams.
We've referenced child death a lot too recently, haven't we? What's going on with us? This is a dark month.
We're going on a dark
this
path.
This is a dark month, yeah. In the end, though, the shoot went smooth, and John Carpenter actually let Wallace do his own thing for the majority of the shoot. Stark contrast from his work on Halloween 2, which he fucked with Rosenthal's work quite a bit. He trusted the new director, and soon got to work on developing a new score for the film with composer Alan Howarth.
Yay!
Hey, yeah, look at things are getting done. Woo!
Woo!
All right, cool. But then it has to get released, and the rest of the stuff has to get done for the film. So, obviously, Alex, let us know how this all crumbled.
Or you could say fell down.
Fell. This is the next sentence.
Yeah. So the song they used for the Silver Shamrock song was a take on London Bridges.
Oh.
A lot of people hated it, but couldn't get it out of their head.
I can't, and I'm totally going to use it for the opening for our credits of this.
Absolutely, yeah. Crazy, because it's honestly so good, and it does get stuck in your head immediately.
Yeah.
So they didn't have money to hire someone to create a new melody, so they used the bass of London Bridges to avoid any copyright issues. This was Deborah Hill's idea.
She's a producer to her core.
Yes.
She's just like, nope, we don't need real, just to repurpose those two masks and create one new one.
So we only pay for the one new one, and then we're going to use a song that has, the copyright has expired,
yep.
So we can use it for free. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Actually, happy birthday's copyright. London Bridges it is.
It took them a week to create the Silver Shamrock commercial, and Tommy Lee Wallace himself sang the song used in the final film, which was sped up in post-production to be more chipmunk-like.
Huh, okay.
Yeah, which is what they... Actually, that's exactly how they filmed Alvin and the Chipmunks.
With the sped up...
They would talk really slowly. And then they'd speed it up in post, and then that's how they got all high-pitched.
Oh my gosh. If Fucking hate Alvin the Chipmunks.
He apparently had a great radio voice and also did it for free to save some money in the budget.
Yeah.
Probably also Deborah Hill's idea. Mm-hmm.
Just let Tommy do it. He's like, well, fuck, man. You guys are just yanking me all around.
The film was finally ready to be
marketed.
Marketed. I was like, marked? Is that some weird like film phrase?
The film was mocked. Is the season of the witch blasphemous? You will flop.
I just imagined.
I did a seance and got my witch buddies to fuck this film. How about that, huh?
Fuck you guys.
Now you're going to put me in a lock for 8 hours?
The nerds and the goths all hang out. Yeah. Fuck you guys. The bitches from the craft came.
Bitches from the craft. Oh, fucking Bill. I'm going to bring Nigel Neal character back.
Okay,
let's go back. Let's go back.
Okay.
Good. We're good.
The film was finally.
We're keeping all this in. Fuck that. I just imagine him, like, fighting some back alley witch. It's just
like. I need you to kick someone.
He used all the commission he got from writing the first script to, like, curse the film.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So the film was finally ready to be marketed and was given the tagline, "The Night No One Comes Home," a play off the tagline of the first film, which is, like, the night he came home, right?
Yeah. It's actually pretty clever. I like that tagline.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. It fits the theme.
Yeah.
A lot of people found the marketing confusing, however, because collectively two brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a huge indicator that this would be an anthology and that Myers would be completely absent. The only thing that sort of hinted at this being an anthology was a blurb on the poster that said "all new" in the corner of the artwork.
Yeah.
Which, again, you are expecting these people to have, like, critical thinking skills.
Yeah, this is, again, Reagan got elected by a landslide. Not a lot of people are smart in this era.
I mean, given our current political administration.
Well, yeah, why did I say this era?
I know. So, Universal basically didn't know how to sell the film. And then there were the critics. Oof. On top of that.
Because they didn't get the heads up either.
No. They missed the memo. A lot of people missed the memo on this.
And this is during a time when Jason's, like, keeps coming back and getting merch and coming back. So they're just like, oh, this is how slashers work.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the established plan for slasher films, right? Yep. So, when it came to positives, Stacey Nelkin's performance was generally praised by critics. Anything else was about as thoroughly gutted as one of Michael Myers' victims.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Our boy, Roger Ebert, gave it 1.5 stars, calling it a low-rent rent thriller from the first frame. Ugh. He actually spends most of his review spoiling the film, right down to Nelkin's death, and said that the first Halloween film was, quote, incomparably better than both of its sequels.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, he didn't like 2, but he also really didn't like this one.
He definitely did not like 3. So when it came to bad reviews, Vincent Canby of the New York Times says it best. Halloween 3 manages the not easy feat of being anti-children, anti-capitalism, anti-television, and anti-Irish all at the same time.
That's pretty good. That's a good line.
Kind of funny.
Oh, dude, I bet fucking Nigel Neal's, like, loving these bad reviews.
Oh, yeah, he has them all cut out in newspapers, taped onto his wall. He has little candles set up.
It's part of the seance.
Yeah, he's just like, thank you for these gifts.
It is the season of the witch, isn't it?
That was good. That was fucking good.
Oh my god.
Oh, we're having too much fun with that.
We're in that late night delirium right now.
It's not even delirium because I'm totally coherent. That was just very funny. Yeah. That was super funny. Oh. There's gonna be some sound editing on this
Absolutely.
One. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
So, Dean Cundey's cinematography was generally praised as well, but critics made a point to skewer the film and the anthology premise as a whole, but even they didn't hate it as much as audiences did.
Yep. So, they were fucking vicious.
Halloween 3, Season of the Bitch. No.
Halloween. I bet you that was like a grade school like little thing. Oh, yeah. There's like that one nerd that's going to be, Halloween 3 is going to be great. You know, they keep, how they bring back Jason, they're going to bring back Myers like a motherfucker. And they're like, oh, dude, I don't know. It says all new in the corner.
Oh, yeah. The like third graders are just like, I have, you know, comprehensive reading skills. Mm-hmm. I got an A in reading class, so.
Well, yeah. Well, how was Halloween 3 Season of the Bitch? Huh, Gary?
Huh, Gary?
Shut up, all right? I didn't know Myers was going to be in it.
Wasn't going to be in it. So, anyway, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch opened on October 22nd, 1982, just a few months after John Carpenter's The Thing, which was considered a flop.
Yeah. See our episode of The Thing to get that one also.
Yeah, so all of it was considered a flop.
Yeah, bad year for Carpenter.
Yeah, the team needed a win, and it really just was not in the cards.
Nope.
In some screenings, people legitimately booed. Yeah. Audiences wanted Michael Myers, and soon discarded the film completely when it was determined he was not in the film at all.
Oh, yeah.
Wallace called the backlash, quote, horrible. Halloween 3 was beaten handedly by films like Poltergeist and Friday the 13th Part 3 and was out of most theaters after its first week thanks to a very embarrassingly low opening weekend.
Oh, I don't have it in there, but it was basically all the budget. What you're seeing right now was like more than... Yeah.
In the end, it had just grossed over $14 million, a far cry from the first two films featuring Michael Myers.
Yeah, it grossed lower than I think anything in the franchise. So,
that
yeah.
Sucks.
Pretty bad. So, obviously, there was some fucking fallout from this. Tom Lee Wallace was crushed by the film's failure and was relegated to writing and directing duties for TV shows and some horror sequels like Amityville 2 and Fright Night 2. He managed to direct a few episodes of the 80s Twilight Zone revival, though, and one episode of Baywatch. So, yeah, it was he was getting gigs.
Which, I mean, like, he still got work. But yeah. I truly think that most of this is, like, him in his head interpreting it as a failure. Which, obviously, like, mm-hmm. yes, it flopped.
It flopped,
but
yeah.
Also, like, if he just held on and, like, dug his heels in and was like, I stand by this shit.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I don't know, it probably would have turned around. I just feel bad because it wasn't poorly directed.
No, it was directed pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the cinematography is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into our thoughts on the film, but, like, it's not a complete failure. And, but Wallace did take the brunt of it.
Of course.
Yeah, and I think he was expected.
As most directors do.
Absolutely. But he was expected to go, like, to be, you know, prestige, to yeah. go from Halloween 3 to, like, bigger films, and then he ends up getting, like, the D-League films, unfortunately.
He ends up getting the Amityville Horror 2 and yeah. Fright Night 2.
Yeah. In fact, Wallace was actually having dinner at a Los Angeles restaurant when a Universal executive walked by and completely ignored him, despite recently working together on Halloween 3.
Wow. Yeah,
like, they just gave him the cold fucking shoulder. So as far as he was concerned, he was done at the big studio. Like, done. Yeah. However, he would later get a major opportunity, thanks to ABC and Warner Brothers, who tasked him with directing an iconic TV adaptation of a Stephen King property starring Tim Curry as a clown named Pennywise. Don't worry, we're going to get to that one day. Yeah, but that definitely brought him back. Tom Atkins and Stacey Nelkin didn't see much improvement when it came to their careers and spent the rest of them doing mostly B-movies and TV shows also. Though their careers generally languished, the film itself has increased in popularity tremendously among fans and has its own dedicated base within the franchise's biggest supporters. So it is the cult Halloween film tactic.
It's the cult classic that everyone, like, you know... You're edgy if it's your favorite one.
Yeah, you know? Like, definitely. But they're diehards now. They're those people that are just like, no, it is the best. It is. Like, next to the first one, obviously. But yeah.
Yeah.
After the box office failure of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, the producers squashed the anthology angle almost immediately. And the rights went back to Mustafa Akkad, who now had near full authority over the franchise.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. John Carpenter and Deborah Hill were ready to leave the franchise for good and had a lot less leverage to do what they wanted to in Hollywood thanks to how badly the film flopped. And that, and John Carpenter's The Thing flopping, this is the turnaround in Carpenter's career that we were talking about last time getting to.
Yeah. In The Thing?
In The Thing, yeah.
We briefly kind of, like, talked about it.
Mm-hmm, yeah. He does have a comeback, obviously, but we'll get to that one later, too. Due to these factors, a bit of slasher oversaturation and negative audience perception of the Halloween franchise, the series will be put on the back burner for 6 years. But its comeback would actually be a pretty big one. The hit the series needed to stay relevant and an eventual fan favorite. But we'll cover Halloween 4 probably in April. So,
yeah.
6 months, guys. Yeah, we'll get to that one. By the way, Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween! Yay! This is Halloween.
Fucking Nigel Neal. Oh
my God. I know, Halloween has witnessed the birth of our very first, like, character.
Oh, that's awesome. Anyways, so that was Halloween 3's production. However, we still got to discuss the very film that we were, you know, talking about right now. So, Alex Webster, what'd you think of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch?
I was so afraid to watch this movie.
Really?
Because this was like months and months and months ago before I'd seen it for the first time because I was just like...
The conditions in which you saw it, let people know though.
Yes, I will get into that. I wasn't sure if there was an opportunity for me to discuss it. Hi, my cat.
Oh my gosh, this cat is all on me right now.
Oh yeah, she likes you.
Huh, and the other one's just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Oh, yeah. That's what she does all the time. So my initial interactions, I guess, with this movie was I went to the Rated R Speakeasy. It's a horror-themed speakeasy in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it once a month, and I think they have, like, two nights of it now. But the first time I went, it was, like, their third time doing it.
That was only their third time?
Yes.
Oh, don't worry, they do Halloween 3. Ah, yes. Okay. So yeah,
it was
okay.
A theme.
Yeah.
Much like the second time I saw Halloween 3. It was a theme. But it was the third time that they had done this horror-themed speakeasy. And it's a bar, and it's an event, and it's really cool, and they also show a horror film. And so I sat down, and they don't tell you what it is. And I sat down, and I was just like, oh, what could it be? And then they started playing it, and up popped, because one of the first things you see is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And I was like, oh, shit.
Like, I'm forced to watch this now.
Now I'm being forced. And so I texted Anthony, and I was like, they're making me watch Halloween 3. And at this point, I had just come back from, like, a extended weekend trip from, like, San Luis Obispo, and, like, I was just, like, I hadn't been home yet, so I was exhausted, and I was just, like, okay.
Just lay it on me. Just lay it on me.
And I was very receptive, and I actually really enjoyed it.
Really?
The first time I watched it? Fuck yeah. Yeah. I was just, like, oh, this is cool. Like, this wasn't what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. Like, I was... Like, when people kept saying anthology film, like, I was expecting, like, the more modern anthology film where I was literally expecting the movie to be broken up into three parts.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's what I was expecting.
That would have been cool.
That's what I was expecting.
With, so, like, a little Myers update in the middle?
Or something. Like, yeah. I knew that it was the only movie that didn't have Michael Myers in it. So at least I had that going for me. but I was expecting, like, so after, like, the first, like, I don't know, like, 20-ish minutes, I was just like, are they going to wrap this up so we can get to the next, like, little segment? And then after, like, 30 minutes, I'm like, okay, so this is the fucking movie. Okay, cool. So that's kind of where I went with that.
That was recent, too. Yeah, that was super recent.
I mean, yeah, so I didn't know a whole lot about it. The only thing I knew about, you know, Halloween 3 going into it was just the, just how much everyone hated it.
Mm-hmm.
Just how it was collectively despised by the horror fandom and how much people just didn't like the movie and how it didn't have Michael Myers in it and how a lot of people don't think it belongs in the franchise and yada, 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 yada. Mm-hmm. But I really liked it. I thought it was fun. I liked the premise that they were going for with the idea that Halloween 1 and Halloween 2, of course, and then Halloween 3, and then with the idea that the continuing movies all take place on Halloween night. Like, I think that's cool, but whatever. What the fuck do I know? Like, what about you?
Who am I, really? See, this is where the film gets pretty divisive. I don't like this film.
Really?
The thing is, like, I've been giving this film a chance my entire existence. I have just constantly been trying to like this film. Like, I really have.
So you want to like it.
I want to. I badly want to. And there are things I like about it. The cinematography, Stacey Nelkin, and, 60% of the script from Nigel fucking Neal. But, no, I mean, there's things I do like about the film, but just as a whole, I also kind of fucking hate it. Like, okay. It's a weird mix. You know what, though? The We Hate Movies guys did an episode of Halloween 3, and I think they're equally divided.
Oh, shit. Did they really?
Because some of them love it, and some people were just like, eh.
Well, I didn't know they did it, because now I have to go listen to it.
It's one of the earlier ones.
Okay, because it's, because I only watch, or I watch, I only listen to episodes of theirs that I, of movies that I've watched.
Mm-hmm.
So, because otherwise it doesn't make
any
sense.
It doesn't make any sense, no.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
They're going through the plot. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to have to go find that. That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's down like the 100 something. Okay. So it's pretty low. But yeah, so, again, this film is divisive. I personally, there are segments that I like, but as a whole, the film is just, I hate the main character. It's a snooze fest for some of it for me.
The back half. So, like, there's, like, I will agree with you, because, like, I think it's so funny. We're, like, inverse opinions, because mm-hmm. it's, like, I, in general, enjoy the movie, but there are pockets of it that I really don't like. And I think the pockets that I don't like are also what makes you, in general, don't like the movie.
Yeah, I think I put a lot more stake into the pockets, I would guess. Yeah.
I suspect that as well. I think what I don't like, I can kind of forgive, because there's a lot that I don't like about a lot of horror films.
Good point. Yeah, no, that's true.
So, I mean, that's all right. I think that throughout the movie, it goes in, like, waves.
It's absolutely. Like again, that's why I want to like it.
Like, the beginning, such a strong fucking opening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the opening's cool as shit.
It's mysterious.
The worst fucking death in the entire fucking movie.
Oh.
I don't know if you have a kill.
With the hand. No, we'll put that in there.
Cause okay.
With the hand, right? Like, the face crushing. And
Because, like, there's a scene in the movie. I don't know if you've seen it. If you haven't seen Halloween 3,
what the fuck are you listening to this shit for?
Go see it.
Despite
please.
Nigel Neal's protests.
There's a scene where, like, this guy basically puts his fingers in the eye sockets of a man, and then going underneath, breaks his nose from the inside, and it cracks, and there's noises, and I did not see it coming. This is the first time I saw it in the rated R speakeasy thing that I went to, and I was so disgusted. And I was like, this
is crunchy.
Right. It's gross, and it's yucky, and it's crunchy, and it's wet sounding, and mm-hmm. I don't like it. Now, the second time I saw it, it was at Camp Frida. It was the last movie of the fucking night.
Of course.
And so I was falling asleep, because it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I had to look away. I like, literally closed my eyes. I was just like, I don't want to see this. Again, it is 6:45 yeah. in the morning.
Can't handle that right now.
Don't want it. Mm-hmm. I'm good. I am chugging the rest of this monster just so I don't die on the spot.
I mean, you know what? That reinforces your point right there, because I think if you take this in with the rest of the franchise, it has some of the best kills in the series.
Absolutely.
These kills are gnarly, dude. They're awesome.
In comparison to Halloween 2's kills?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Michael Myers, he's a stabby, choky kind of, slasher mm-hmm. guy.
He's a stab, maim, you know.
Yeah, he's not like Jason, where he's, like, fucking throwing people against trees and shit, you know?
Jason has, like, traps set up and shit.
Yeah.
Like, Jason is creative.
Mm-hmm. Michael Myers is more like a panther.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, like, chilling in the bushes and just like,
yeah.
You're fucked.
Only very slowly.
Yeah, like a very sadistic panther. Yes. But when you
like my cat.
Like your cat, yeah. Not the one that likes me.
No, the one that likes you. Because she looks like a panther.
Oh, that's right. I thought you meant by the killing prowess. Okay.
Yeah. No. I mean, she's also the one who's, like, more likely to, like, if I were to let her outside, would most likely bring me back, like, a half-alive bird. Oh, dude,
she's a badass. Damn.
Yeah. Like, that's why I keep all my blinds closed, or I have to keep my windows closed when I'm not here, because otherwise she'll, like, run at the screens and run out of them because she's trying to kill the birds in my trees.
It's hilarious. Michael Myers cat.
Yeah, she's the Michael Myers cat.
Oh,
this
that's
is,
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, which one is this? What murderer?
What horror icon is this cat? Leprechaun. No, I don't
know. Just a little shit talker, huh?
Yeah, actually.
Oh, actually, that's not yet. Or Charles E. Ray Chucky? No.
No, because
Freddy Krueger.
I hate Freddy Krueger. Yeah, I'm going to say Leprechaun.
All right, Leprechaun.
She talks a lot of shit. As long as you don't fuck with her stuff.
That's a very good
As long as you don't fuck with her or her stuff or move her, she's fine. Like, the second she goes into a kennel, like, she's like, fuck you, fuck your mother, fuck this, fuck you. Like, no, choke. Like, she's just like...
As a substitute, we'll blend it together and tie it to the film. She's the Silver Shamrock.
Yes.
Cat.
Yeah.
She's the Halloween 3 variant.
Definitely.
We gotta post these cats now, just so people know. Yeah. Just so they know.
Just for reference, because I think we've brought them up like 3 times.
They have been intruding on the cast day. But okay, I didn't actually put this question here, but I do want to know, how do you feel about the characters in this film?
Because
I got a lot of shit talking to do.
They're fine.
They're pretty stock-ish.
Yeah, whatever. Characters. Like, I'm not watching this movie for the characters.
Yeah.
Like, Dr. Dan Chalice can fucking, like...
Dr. Dave Chonkla. I know, he's
fucking... can suck a dick. Like,
I hate him.
Yeah, he's an asshole. He's like, first of all, alcoholic doctors annoy the fuck out of me. Dude, like, I'm like, get help.
He's not even, like... He's like a hard alcoholic.
Yeah.
He's, like, hard alcoholic.
Yeah. He is like a, how has no one noticed you're not an alcoholic?
Even his wife is just like, he's...
Ex-wife,
that's right.
Which I did not pick up on. I thought he was cheating on his wife.
I thought so too.
The whole fucking time.
I thought so too. I think actually seeing it this time is the first time I picked up that, oh, there's a custody thing going on here.
Yeah. I did not realize that until the second time I watched it. The first time I watched it, I was like, this bitch ass is cheating on his wife with this 20-something.
Barely 20-something.
This 19-year-old. Like, I...
Fucking, her dad just died. He's just swooping in just like, hey, I can buy a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, also, her dad just died. Like, there's daddy issues out the fucking wazoo of this one.
She wants to figure shit out, and he's just like, yeah, I'll help you figure it out, baby.
Ugh. He just wants to fuck.
Fucking creepazoid, like, not even being with his kids on Halloween.
Yeah, that too, where he's calling them from the Silver Shamrock thing, just like...
Yeah.
Don't put on the fucking masks.
And she's like, are you drunk again? He's like, I'm not drunk, baby. I just fucking don't let him wear it.
God.
Oh, fucking.
Anyway, so.
Tom Atkins is obviously a nice guy. It's just fucking weird.
Yeah. Tom Atkins, I'm sure he's a great guy, but, like, good lord, his character in this movie was fucking annoying and, like, borderline unwatchable. The scene where he has to, like, Mission Impossible his way out of that room. I'm just like, oh my god.
Good old pneumonia Tom Atkins right there.
Well, no, because it was just like he like managed to get a piece of glass and cut through the binds and then throw the mask over the camera.
No, secret agent training is part of the doctor of medical school regiment right there. You know what?
I totally forgot. My friends in medical school totally told me about this. They do have secret agent training.
Yeah,
I totally forgot about that.
If people want to make you a mob doctor, just remember there's going to be some sticky situations in the future. You got to be able to whizzle your way out of this shit.
Yeah, and then also you always have a syringe filled with sleeping medicine. Not specific. And it's full. It's completely full, you just inject that into anyone. And it won't kill them. It'll just knock them out. Everyone has it.
No. He had that because he knew he was going to go out with this girl for a while. He didn't know how the night was going to turn out. he's that character.
Anthony!
I'm sorry.
Gross.
I fucked up.
It's funny, but gross.
I'm just basing off of good old fucking... Dr. fucking Derek Chiodo over here.
No! We're not gonna bring dishonor to the Chiodo name.
No, you're right. That's Derek Chiodo. Alright, Derek Chiodo.
Derek Chiodo. Alright.
We'll do sure. Derek Chiodo. Don Chiodo. How about that?
Right. So, okay, we kind of talked about this earlier, but, so, what do you think of the intentions of the villains were towards the end of the film?
I have no fucking idea.
Yeah, by the end of the movie, I was kind of just like... What's the goal?
Why are they killing all the children?
Well, I got that part. Because, like, well, first of all, anytime anyone uses, like, a pagan holiday for, like, evil, I'm just like, you didn't do the reading,
no,
did you?
No, you didn't. Yeah.
Because, like, they use Samhain, and I'm pretty sure they don't pronounce the name correctly. Because it's pronounced, because, like, the written Samhain is like when it's written out, it sounds like it looks like Samhain.
Yeah, with an M. That's right.
It has Samhain. It's like Samhain, and a lot of people pronounce it like that, and it's pronounced Samhain. and that throws a lot of people off. And I'm pretty sure they did not pronounce it correctly in the movie, if I recall correctly.
There could have been a couple pronunciations, to be honest with you. I don't know.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah. But the point is they were just like, ah, yes, we must sacrifice the children to the old gods of fucking, I don't know.
And by the way, we have a corporation, which is needs to profit.
Right. So there's a lot. I think, I mean, a whole part of it was like, it was supposed to be like anti-capitalist?
I guess so. And they're like, again, 3,000-year-old demon initially, just right. CEO later on.
They were...
They had Stonehenge in there somewhere.
Right. And then they stole a rock from Stonehenge mm-hmm. and brought it to the factory so they could channel its powers to then recycle the souls of children into Stonehenge to get power?
Power. General power.
General power?
They're like, we can use the magic now and put the public.
Yeah, so what? They were aiming for what Guillermo del Toro accomplishes. Like, they were going for this anti-capitalistic mythical magic feel
mm-hmm.
and they got Halloween
3. It was made in the 80s, so they're like, well, we gotta simplify it, add some sex and gore, sorry.
It's true.
Sorry about your nuance, buddy. Yeah, that's just not gonna
happen. That part was like, it was almost like added as like an afterthought, so mm-hmm. it made it kind of like, I was like, what the, okay.
I don't know, this ending just weird. I do like how like everybody dies. I think that's good.
That is nice.
Yeah, it's refreshing for, like...
I remember getting to the end of it the first time I watched it, and I was like, they really just fucking killed everyone, huh?
Yeah, I actually think that's pretty... I wish they would have had the screams of children. Just I think it would have been cool.
I think because they killed everyone, having the screams of children would have been a better creative choice.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, if you really think about both endings, that they could have gone with the ambiguous angle. Him saving the day kind of sucks.
Also, the girl... Was she always a robot, or was she switched out?
I think she was switched out.
That's what I thought, yeah. too. Uh-huh. And I wasn't sure, because it wasn't very clear.
I mean, she kind of just stops talking towards the end.
It's true.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it was like she was switched out, or she was always a robot, and her programming got kind of like... tweaked, because everyone in the building that was operating her was dead.
Yeah, they couldn't like...
control her?
Ooh, maybe. Who the fuck knows, honestly?
So, if you're listening and you think that... we'll run a poll on Instagram.
Yeah. What the fuck was going on with this lady?
Yeah, like whether or not she was a robot the whole time or if she was switched out at the end. I would love to know what people think.
Yeah, same here. We'll do a Halloween poll. There we go. We gotta figure this out.
Also, that means they basically would have had to like build an entire robot girl.
And a convincing robot vagina. So
yeah, that's kind of what I was implying. Here.
Yeah.
He's
also a drunker, though. He might not have really known that well.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
This is a weird one.
This is a weird episode.
Yeah, yeah.
We've gone to a lot of weird places.
A little different angles here.
Anyway.
Well, okay, so do you think the film successfully accomplishes its witchcraft meets the computer age angle?
No,
I don't think so either. I don't know what's going on with
again,
that.
Again, talked about this earlier. Buffy the Vampire Slayer did this is in season one.
Mm-hmm.
So this is in, like, 1994, 5?
Yeah, good old Windows 95.
Not even. Like, these are, like, I think it's a little bit, like, a touch earlier. Mm. But it's bad. It's
Damn.
So bad. Like, these computers are ancient, and it's, like, they're not even, like, Macs. Like, these are old, old, old computers.
Oh, my God.
And the scanning technology, and it's just, I can envision it in my head. I can't describe it to you, because I don't even know the terminology at this point.
It's, like, DOS era fucking...
Sure. But, no, it's just, I'll find the scene, and I'll show it to you, but it is from season one or two, I want to mm-hmm. say. And it is pretty fucking funny because, like, I'm just like, wow, you guys thought you were, like, on the cutting edge of technology. Like, oh, what if we, like, accidentally summon a demon? Because, like, the whole premise of the episode is, like, they scan an old text.
Mm-hmm.
And by scanning the text, it's misconstrued as reading the text, which means it summons the demon.
I like that premise a lot, actually.
But it summons it into the computer.
Okay, that changes it kind of a lot.
Right, so the demon is in the computer.
Huh.
And the computer...
has enough RAM to process the demon.
Correct. But the demon starts, like, fucking with, like, students and, like, taking things, like, their allergies out of, like, their student files and, like...
Okay.
This is also when Buffy is still in high school, so the entire world, like, the entire slaying world takes place, basically, in Sunnydale High School.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so...
So, we will cover TV shows, and I promise the episode where I dive into Buffy the Vampire Slayer will be a lengthy, probably multiple-parter.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
It'll be so fun, and
that'll
I promise.
That'll be a lot of fun.
If you want it, yeah. Let me know. Let
us know.
Give me an opportunity to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I will.
Clearly, because if we're because honestly, they don't nail this, and even Buffy can't nail this. This is just a bad concept.
No, it's hard to do well because, I mean, even like modern movies or like the whole Countdown like movie. It's a movie that's like just coming out where it's like you download an app and it's telling you when you're gonna die, and I'm just like, this is some dumb bullshit.
The only one that did it good was the first Unfriended movie. I think they nailed it.
The first Unfriended is okay.
Oh, I love it. But I mean, in terms of like,
it's fun. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's like, you know. I mean, it's enjoyable. Yeah. It is an enjoyable dumb popcorn horror. Exactly. Flick.
But in terms of doing the concept. I think they did it pretty good.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Because it does have that supernatural element to it.
Yes.
The second one, however, is leagues better, in my opinion.
God. Oh, my God. I don't know. I got to find out.
I keep gassing it up, and I'm really afraid you're not going to like it. Because if you don't like it, I'm going to be, honestly, destroyed.
Oh, well, I mean, I know there's two endings to that one. So I'm anxious to see.
I actually did not know that.
Oh, yeah. There's two endings. It's randomized which one you get. It's a whole thing.
What do you mean? Like, the movie theater?
Yes. The movie theater had two different endings.
What?
So some people got an ending that was generally, like, made the movie better, and then some people got an ending that people thought was really stupid.
Ah, fuck. I think I might have gotten the good ending then, because by the end of it, I was just like, fuck.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to see. But yeah, this is a hard concept to nail, and I think if your computer technology is shit, the concept is even worse.
I agree.
Yeah. Sorry, we're just... At this point in human history, we've gone beyond, like, look... Aren't computers funny? Like, yeah, we just can't.
Like, at this point, like, literally everyone ever has a computer in their pocket. Like,
yeah.
There's, like, they're trying to do it with Countdown. They tried to do it with Halloween 3. Like, it's just, it's not, it cannot be done in a way that, one, ages well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's, anytime anyone incorporates technology as, like, a core to their film, it's not going to age well.
Wait a minute. You mean you didn't like the Frankie Muniz vehicle, Stay Alive, produced by Disney? No?
What?
You ever heard about that one? No. The video game movie? Where they're, like, in the video game?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Actually, I have seen that a couple times.
A couple times?
Yes, because it was on one of, like, the cable, like, horror channels that, like, plays the same, like, 20 shitty horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Was Frankie Muniz produced that?
No, it was Disney produced. Frankie Muniz was in the movie.
Was he in it?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh. He was one of the, like, I don't think he was the main character, but he was just one of the guys.
Oh, wow. Is it the one that has, like, about, like, Elizabeth Bathory?
I don't know who that is.
Then, okay, hold on.
Oh, we gotta find out again. We're in a research mode this episode.
So this is from 2006.
Oh, what the shit? I thought it was like 2002.
No.
Frankie Muniz, right?
Hold on, I'm opening up IMDb. It has... Oh yeah, there he is.
Yep, Frankie Muniz, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, John Foster. Oh my gosh. It also has... Oh, what's his face? Jimmy Simpson.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he's in it. I remember him.
Ooh, shit. Okay.
We might have to cover
this one, honestly. Like,
no, it's dumb. Like, I remember watching it a couple times, and it's like, it is such a, like, dumb, horrible, like, okay.
Oh my God, we should do a theme month.
Of what?
Tech horror.
Tech horror? Maybe the month, maybe for, but for July, for Comic-Con. Instead of zombies versus aliens or something, we should do tech-themed horror films.
Tech-themed horror. Oh, so, that'd be fun.
The synopsis is, for a group of teens, the answer to the mysterious death of their old friend lies within the world of an online video game based on the true story of an ancient noblewoman known as the Blood Countess. It's Elizabeth Bathory.
Oh, this is a very hard concept to do.
It's hard to do well. This one did not age well. None of them age well.
No.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because DJ loves that movie.
I mean, I think it's enjoyable. You know what? I can see it being enjoyable in that schlocky, dumb kind of way.
In the same way that I think I kind of enjoy...
this movie?
Sure. Yeah. And this one I actually enjoy a little bit more than it's like it's above schlock for me.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Unfriended, the first one.
Oh, okay.
Because the first one is just like, it's so like, it tries too hard to be like, we're hip, we're cool, we're modern. Because it's just like, you see like all of her like tabs open, and she has like MTV.com.
It's like, look at how Apple we are. Hey.
Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, we get it. You know how a computer works. Yeah. We get it. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm just like, no one, like, please, we get it. Anyway, bringing it back.
Okay, we're back
enough
here.
Of the computer age.
Just talking shit.
We've answered the question. So how do you feel about the masks of the film? Do they match the quality of others in the franchise?
I think the jack-o'-lantern one does.
The pumpkin?
Pumpkin mask, I actually really dig as a mask.
I really like the skeleton one.
It's my least favorite.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's creepy to me. I don't know.
It is creepy. It is creepy. But creepy. It's something distinctive about that, like, jack-o'-lantern. It's like an actual...
Is it because you watched the child die with the jack-o'-lantern mask on?
I think that makes it scarier, yeah. That definitely makes it scarier. I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, take him out! Yeah. The witch one, obviously, is like, whatever, it's a witch.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it's not that big a deal.
I know, I love seeing, like, you know, ugly Hagrid witch stuff, and I'm like, I know so many hot witches, like, come on.
But I mean, considering the whole franchise, like, how divisive the masks are in Halloween, it's kind of cool that generally these ones aren't that bad. Like, they're pretty solid masks for the most part. Not necessarily the best, but solid.
Yeah, can you imagine a costume company that only ever made 3 masks?
Okay, that is weird.
And, like, they sold out everywhere?
Ah, I don't know. Like, yeah, a full company back in this shit. Like, yeah, that's all we have. These are the flagships.
Bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they didn't... This is pretty anti-capitalist. I don't think
they... Of course. Well, of course, they used it as, like, this big, like, oh, yeah, we, like, you know, this idea of, like, a company making one product and then everyone clamoring to buy that one product, right?
It was all viral and all that shit. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, even with, like, the commercials, like, the 6 more days till Halloween.
God damn it.
Halloween,
fucking A. Halloween. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, that kind of shit. Like, they released a new commercial every single fucking day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had to produce a new commercial, you know, for...
Poor Tommy Lee Wallace.
I know.
Yeah, him, but within the film,
I mean, like, within the film, like, they had to do that. And I just think that that is very interesting as well.
Yeah. Well, how did you feel about the mask, though?
I liked him enough. Yeah. Like, it wasn't, like, super integral to the film to me. Like, it wasn't as iconic, necessarily. I liked the, yeah, I mean, I like all 3 of them together as, like, a cohesive, like, iconic unit.
They are good as a unit. Like, they're very good as a unit, actually.
Like, as a unit, I think that represents the film well.
Yeah, that's a good point. 3 masks, 3rd installment? Oh, shit.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're the first
all
one.
All new.
I'm sure you're the first one
yeah,
to thought of that.
I know, right? Not that it just dawned on me now after decades of watching this film and trying to like it.
Forcing
myself to... You see how much I have a hard time paying attention?
Yeah.
Because of how little I've actually analyzed until
it's
this point. Yeah. But, okay, actually, this is a pretty big question here. So, do you think the film would have succeeded if it hadn't had the Halloween name attached to it? And how would you advertise the film, seeing Universal had no fucking idea how to do it?
Okay. Here's my marketing plan.
Yes.
Because Alex Webster works in marketing. first of all, I think if it did not... I think if they had advertised it fucking correctly, and if they had been like, listen, bitches, like, Michael Myers is dead. He's not coming back. Get over it. Secondly, here's a new fucking movie. We're doing a... Whatchamacallit? What's it called?
Anthology.
Anthology, thank you. We're doing an anthology. It's gonna be cool. Like,
it's gonna be cool. Very aggressive marketing
thank
right
you.
There.
Yeah. No, I think what would have been really, really cool if the commercials for the movie had been Silver Shamrock.
Yeah, like that would have been cool.
Like, that would have been cool, because then it would have told people, like, different masks, different theme, what's Silver Shamrock, what's going on. And then that would have told people it's going to be different. than Halloween 1 and 2, and then also would have gotten that fucking song stuck in people's heads, and then they would have seen the movie, and then it just would have created this whole culture of that fucking song, and then the song, obviously, by the end of it, is what makes people's heads explode with bugs.
Yeah, that would have been great! See, now, actually, I think, going off of that idea, this actually just dawned on me. A good way to tell people Michael Myers won't be in the film is have a commercial where Michael Myers is replacing his mask with the fucking with the pumpkin one, and he puts it on, and then the song comes on and fucking just gets bugs. Taken out right there.
No, because that would have spoiled the movie.
Oh fuck,
it would have spoiled the movie, and it would have been too campy.
No, that would have camp it up.
More camp.
Camp it up.
More blood.
I wanted I wanted a dead Myers in front of a TV on the floor so people know he's not in the movie. He's not in there. Don't get your fucking hopes up. He died right here.
You know, it's so funny. I think the moment people knew that Michael Myers wasn't going to be in the movie is when they saw him on TV in the movie. Like, when that meta is fuck moment.
Oh my god, they're just that a lot of people went soft right there.
Yeah, they were just like, aww.
Oh no.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry, babe.
Like, come on.
Ugh. Yeah. So. Okay, but like,
that's my marketing plan.
Also, I think
Universal, hire me, please.
Yeah, right. Do the Halloween anthology film as the second film and bring Myers back later on.
That's the other thing, is they fucked up by doing two movies back-to-back with Michael Myers. Mm-hmm. If they had done the first movie, and then that was it, and then... Because also, the first movie ended on a great fucking, like, cliffhanger note.
Exactly.
And then Season of the Witch ended on a great fucking cliffhanger note. If they had just, like, left it at that, so if they had done one and then they had done Season of the Witch and then they had revisited Michael Myers later down the road if they had wanted to, then that would have been fine. Because here's the thing, Season of the Witch is a great one-off story. Season of the Witch does not have the longevity of fucking Michael Myers. Like,
doesn't, nope.
So it would have been great as an anthology.
Yeah.
That being said, I do respect the longevity of Michael Myers and, like, what the Halloween franchise has come to represent.
Yeah. So, like, we got a good franchise out of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you give and you take.
Yeah. I still think, though, like, if they would have just done that second film as this, and then, not even the third film, go a couple, and then really bring back Myers.
Yeah.
Like, that hype would have just been the shit. That would have been the best. But no, they, you know... Both the first two made a lot of money and were successful, so they can't let them go.
I don't know if this is a controversial statement or not, but if they had done 1, 3, then just went straight to fucking 4. Oh. Like, if they had just skipped 2, I would have been fine.
That would have been great.
I did not like 2.
Yeah.
Listen to Halloween 2, but I did not like it. I did not care for it. I thought it was redundant. I thought it was pointless.
It's kind of whatever. And, like, honestly, you're right. They could have just skipped and went straight to 4. I think that would have been
nothing
great.
Nothing happened in 2 that was of any poignancy except for, like, oh, did you know Michael Myers and Laurie Strode are siblings? Like, what?
What? You don't like, what, 12 minutes of Laurie Strode in there? She's, like, on the fucking posters?
She's unconscious. She's unconscious.
Unconscious or crying, that's it. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, all right.
Listen to Halloween 2 for more of my very angry thoughts about Halloween 2.
It's actually like 20 minutes, but still, like, it's a longer movie. So, why do you think there's been such a resurgence in popularity for Season of the Witch?
I think, like, it's that hindsight is 2020 type
hindsight's
of deal.
Hindsight's 2020, that's a good point,
It's just, like, now that, like, we're getting into, like, this era of, like, remakes and reboots, where, I mean, people can watch the franchise kind of as, like, this collective unit and just identify Season of the Witch as the one that, like, kind of stands out, then you can watch it as its own thing. I think I would have been pissed if I had watched it when it had come out.
Yeah. No, definitely,
like,
I would have been pissed.
I definitely would have been like, well, fuck you guys. Like,
I mean, I was pissed as a kid, so yeah.
Right. So, I think now it has... I mean... Because now you can kind of watch it and take it out of the franchise and watch it as its own entity. Because that's kind of what I had to do when I watched it. Like, I was just like, okay. Like, knowing that the goal was to create an anthology of movies that took place on Halloween night. Like, that was the goal. That's where they wanted to take the Halloween franchise.
Yep.
Which would have been cool. Like, I will say, like, if that had been successful, that would have been really, really fucking cool. But the fact that it did not go that route, it's also totally cool.
Yeah, yeah,
totally. I love the Halloween franchise. The only thing is just, like, watching it, I think it's fine. Like, I just think that you're able to take it out of the context and enjoy it.
People are able to enjoy it for what it is. Yeah, exactly. And I think
as a schlocky 80s horror film.
Right? And it is distinctively 80s. And I gotta say, as much as I fucking whatever about this movie, it is a very original movie.
Yeah.
It's original as shit. Like,
definitely.
People don't do this concept, and you don't really get Dean Cundey with a first-time director.
Yeah.
And all the elements that make it kind of weird.
Nigel.
Fucking Neil.
Nigel Neil.
It is an original movie. Yeah, fuck you.
Did we say you could speak?
Yeah. Get back in the locker.
My underwear is over my head.
That's fucked up. He's got like a little... Oh, no. No more. But yeah, it is a very original film, and I think originality is in low supply. You know, with films currently, to be honest with you, for
definitely.
The most part.
Oh yeah.
So it's easy to appreciate it, and I think again it's shot well, and obviously Tommy Lee Wallace does have some directorial skill. I mean, even with the ABC TV movie budget they gave him, he managed to make a Tim Curry fucking terrifying.
Yeah, definitely.
So like, you know, he's definitely got it in him. He just didn't get his chance.
Yeah.
Like, he really didn't get a fair shake.
Well, that and also people just didn't really give him the time of day.
They didn't. No.
Like. I mean, he went on, I mean, you know, we don't know what he went on to do, so we'll cover it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there.
Exactly.
But I think that the, it was just because people were expecting something and they didn't get it, which mm-hmm. pissed them off. And I think a lot of that does have to do with Universal just not marketing the film well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now that we're removed from the context of it at its time, people can, again, see the movie for what it is and find something to like.
Definitely. Okay, so as our final question... How would you rate this film out of 5 Silver Shamrock commercials?
Oh my god. This is a solid 2.5 for me.
Wow.
Right down the middle.
Okay.
Right down the middle. Again, I divided because, again, there's elements of the movie I like.
That's so
But
funny.
There's more that I don't. Enough to where, like, I'd still give it credit for being, like, having good moments and being well shot. And I like Tommy Lee Wallace. But I just don't like a lot of the film, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was going to say a 2.5 or a 3. Like,
3, yeah.
Yeah, like, I like this movie. I like that you don't like this movie and we gave it the same rating.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not, like, objectively, like, there's not a lot of, like, good. Mm-hmm. But it's enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
Anyway. Like, there's also, it's just, it's fun to talk about.
It is absolutely fun to talk about, I will say. Yeah.
Like, whether you like it or you hate it, finding a horror fan and sitting down with them and asking, like, what are your thoughts on Season of the Witch, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Because then you get conversations like this, where you're like, oh, I hated this. Oh, I love this. Or like, oh, like, you know.
It's fun to talk shit on Tom Atkins' character, to be honest
with
you.
Right. Well, that, and also, like, it's just like, and then that weird sex scene in the middle of a weird hotel, in the middle of, like, weird Northern California.
With Dr. fucking Dino Chipotle. And shit.
Yeah, like, it was, like, there's a lot of, like, weirdness in the movie, and I think that's what makes it kind of enjoyable, but also, if you like it, you like it, like, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. It's definition of a cult film, really.
Definitely.
Like, it's culty.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely culty, and I can see why people who are into it are into it, and I can see why people who hate it, hate it.
Yep.
So it is, by definition, a culty film.
Cult film, absolutely.
All right, I think that's it. Happy fucking Halloween, guys.
I know, we went through October, biggest month, guys. Thank you for all the support.
Yeah, I actually think biggest month in terms of, listens.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has been a huge month for us, so thank you so much for all the support.
A surprising amount really liked Lake Mungo.
Really?
Yeah, in terms of just viewership, I'm like, holy shit.
Which is so great, because I remember the first day we watched, or the first day after, or the day, like, the night that it had come out, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, let's see how many people listen to, like, Mungo today, because it just dropped. And it was, like, I don't know, like, 30, like,
it was like nothing.
And I was really bummed about it, because I was, like, so happy, I was so excited about that episode, and I was like...
No.
This is too niche. I went too far.
No, it's
I crossed
like,
a line.
It's like Poughkeepsie, slow build.
Yeah.
Slow build.
No.
Yeah.
And then also, of course, all the love for Hocus Pocus. Thank you guys. I'm so glad you guys liked it. That one was fun as well. Obviously, Resident Evil. Thank you again to Alex for helping us out with that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was actually one of the people saying you should do TV shows.
Really? Yeah. Okay, cool. Just for Alex, then. But yeah, so all of the episodes this month we carefully crafted just for you guys because, mm-hmm. you know, it just kind of mirrors our own tastes. And
exactly.
What,
as opposed to other months where we're just shitting these out, you know?
Well, no, like, it mirrors our own taste. We try to complement them with each other so they pair well like a fine wine.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for all the support. We're only going to keep going and going and going. We have the next couple of months planned out, so we're going to keep plummeling right through to November. And we already have some awesome stuff planned out.
Yeah, November's fun.
Yeah.
That's actually a really fun
one. We're kicking off November with a fun one. We've actually hinted to it already, kind of. So if you've listened to this episode carefully, you kind of might know what we're talking about next week.
Yeah.
So listen carefully, viewers, listeners.
folks.
people. so if you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It helps us stay prevalent in the charts. And on top of the algorithms and, you know, keeping all the Cochrans of the world down.
Yeah, that's right.
and then if you want to stay up to date with everything that's going on the podcast, we love interacting with you guys. So please, please, please follow us on social media. You can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE, People's Podcast. And then you can find us on Twitter at Horror People Pod. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler because he's a nerd. Yeah. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop because I am also a nerd. I think that is about it. Do you have anything else to add, Anthony?
I was thinking of one more, whatever that doctor's name was, but I'm tired now. Let's go bounce.
He's ready to go home. Yep. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next week in November.
Dino Chungus. There you go. All right, see you guys.
Have a happy, safe Halloween, and we'll catch you next time.
Peace.
Bye, guys.